So this morning, hopefully you were still listening in while the puppets were talking, but I hope you realise that although these mornings, our aim is that the kids are able to really engage with everything, that it isn't as such a kids' morning, because I'm hoping that as we discuss some what are potentially fairly simple biblical foundational truths, that each one of us grabs a hold of something and takes it away with us. And I don't know if you were listening to some of the things that the puppets were talking about, and Emma was describing brilliantly how we love God, but I think there's lots of things in there for us to take a hold of as well. So, because I don't know about you, but as I get older, it's easy for me to become complicated. It's easy for me to become sometimes complacent. I mean, I'm not that old, obviously, but it's easy for us to get familiar with things. And so this morning, one of the things I want to do is to give you a little prod, give you a little shake, give you a little stir up and say, let's become together the men and women of God that God he has called us to be. So let's do it. So this verse that we're looking at this morning, it's in three of the Gospels. And just to give you the context, it's always good to know the context, isn't it, as we're looking at a particular verse of Scripture. And this is where Jesus is talking to a number of the religious scholars of the day. And in the first five books of the Bible, apparently, this is your homework over lunch. In the first five books of the Bible, there are 613 separate commandments, okay? Now, I think that's right, but if you could just check over lunch. There's 613 separate commandments. And so the religious scholars, the religious leaders of the day would often sit and have debates about which of these 613, I don't know if they go through all of them, but this is my understanding that they would have conversation to say, well, which of these particular commandments is the most important one. So when Jesus is talking, and you remember that often the religious leaders, they hear Jesus teaching, and not everyone agreed. He upset a lot of people, but they couldn't fail to be impressed. So when they thought, well, let's find out Jesus' view on this hotly debated topic, which out of all these commandments is the most important thing? And this morning, I don't know about you, but in our noisy multimedia, all guns blazing, everyone's got an opinion, everyone's got a view. I think it'd be pretty good. I'd be interested to know today what Jesus' view would be on this same question. Do you think it would have changed? Probably not. I don't think so. And so I think today, as we think about what the most important commandment is for our lives, I think that it's even more vital, perhaps, than it was in those days to hear what Jesus has got to say as the most important thing. So let's just read a bit either side of this passage. I'm reading from Mark. It's in two of the other Gospels as well. One of the teachers of religious law was standing there listening to the debate. He realized that Jesus had answered well. So he asked, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" And Jesus replied, "The most important commandment is this. Listen, O Israel, the Lord our God is the one and only Lord. And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. The second is equally important, love your neighbour as yourself. No other commandment is greater than these." The teacher of religious law replied, "Well said, teacher. You have spoken the truth by saying that there is only one God and no other. And I know it is important to love him with all my heart, all my understanding, and all my strength, and to love my neighbour as myself. This is more important than to offer all of the burnt offerings and sacrifices required in the law." Realizing how much the man understood, Jesus said to him, "You're not far from the kingdom of God." And after that, no one dared to ask him any more questions. And I guess here we get a bit of an insight. This particular guy seemed to have a bit of a revelation, didn't he? Seemed to catch a sense of what Jesus was saying. And it's almost like Jesus is saying, not everyone here seems to get what I'm talking about, but this one particular guy seemed to be able to catch hold of it. And actually, there were things that what they were talking about were things that have been discussed many, many times. And yet, this particular guy, on that particular day, the light seemed to come on. And I don't know about you, but as we're looking at this morning, my prayer is that for each of us, the light just comes on again. And if this is a verse that's very familiar to us, that once again we catch a sense at the start of this year that loving God is the most important thing that we can do. So, and actually, if you look in a bit more detail at the verse for a minute, obviously, Jesus mentions a number of things. And I've been reading around the subject a little bit. So when he says, love God with all your heart, the literal translation would be, heart would include thinking and affection. I think, Zach, I think I've got this on the slides. So love the Lord your God with all your heart, which would be the equivalent of thinking and affection. Love the Lord your God with your soul, which would be inclusive of desires and feelings. Love the Lord your God with all your mind is obvious, all our understanding. And love the Lord your God with all your strength, which would include everything about us, our energy and our power, particularly with the things that was relating to. So I guess another way you could write this passage would be, love the Lord your God with all your thinking and affection, your desire and feeling, your understanding and your energy and your power. And it's clear, I guess, but Jesus is kind of underlining that it needs to be absolutely everything. And I was thinking about this earlier in the week, and it's like in other relationships that we have, there are times when we hold things back, there are times when we don't give our everything. But if that is the case, then there can be a conflict. If we agree with one another, or in particular relationships, but we don't give everything. Particularly, I'm thinking, I guess, in marriage relationships, if there's areas where we are completely open, completely honest, but there are other areas where, for whatever reason, these are all journeys, aren't they, where we don't have a complete level of openness. There can be a conflict and there can be tension. And I think that is very much the same when we're thinking about our relationship with God. And actually, in terms of our relationship, human relationships, we know that they can be very rewarding and fulfilling, but also very difficult and painful. And yet that's not the case with God, because actually loving God is the only thing that really completes us. Now, if you want my... I was looking around for various... as I was reading around this topic, I was looking for a mighty, meaty quote on what it means to love God. Okay, so I looked in various number of sources, and then I realised that I got a clever friend who could probably direct me towards a good quote. Okay, and who knows, it's good to have clever friends. It's very useful to have clever friends. So I asked my clever friend. Now, she's a scientist, so she often sees things. She often has revelations of things that God's speaking to her that come through the medium of science. So if you're a scientist here this morning, then this might particularly grab you. But this is what she says, and I think it's clever, it's brilliant. She says, I would also like to say that in all my years of studying the invisible realities of the quantum world, we have a few quantum world experts here this morning. There is one broad truth that is so simple and yet so revolutionary that it deserves to be trumpeted here. What science now tells us loud and clear is that it turns out that the whole universe is relational. Nothing is defined as an island. Everything only makes sense in relationship to everything else. It makes total sense that the heart of the gospel and the heart of life is loving God. And she says, marshalling all of one's energies and capacities and depositing them firmly and permanently in the proximity of the one relationship that can actually set all things right. It's good, isn't it? Do you like that? Okay, I could ask Janet to put this in Ashwood News so that we can think about it a bit more. But I'd also like to say that in all my years of studying the invisible reality of the quantum world, there is one broad truth that is so simple and yet so revolutionary that it deserves to be trumpeted here. What science now tells us, loud and clear, is that it turns out the whole universe is relational. Nothing is defined as an island. Everything only makes sense in relationship to everything else. It makes total sense that the heart of the gospel and the heart of life is loving God. Marshalling all of one's energies, therefore, and capacities, and depositing them firmly and permanently in the proximity of the one relationship that can actually set all things right. Or in other words, everything only makes sense when we're loving God. So, why would we love God? Why do we love God? Four things. First, because he first loved us. 1 John 4, a very famous passage talking about God being love, but reminding us that actually the reason that we love God in the first place is because he first loved us. Second reason why we love God, it's not L'Oreal, but it's because he's worth it. And I don't know about you, but the more I get to know God, the more I understand that this is true. That in my relationship with God, the more I get to know of him, the more I see him, the more I explore, the more I find, the more I journey with God, the more I realize and understand that he's worthy of my love. The third reason, the puppets mentioned it, is because, and actually Graham was talking about it last week, that Jesus said, if you want to love me, then you'll obey my commandments. So why do we love God? It's part of our obedience to Jesus, isn't it? And the fourth point, and I'm sure there's many more, is that the truth is that we're made to love. I don't know if you've thought about it recently, but the way that we're put together, the way that God created us, we are beings who naturally, instinctively want to love. We're all beings who both need to be loved and need to love. And so I guess at the start of the year, when some of us are looking at what the important priorities are of our life, just to slip this one in as a reminder doesn't do us any harm. Because the truth is that if we are people who are made to love, then we naturally will gravitate towards certain things. And I don't know about you, but unless I intentionally and proactively put God first in everything, I can start to wander. And before you know it, there's other things that are getting my attention, my affections, my desires. They get my mind capacity. They get some of my soul capacity, I guess. And certainly some of my energy and my strength is invested into things which aren't necessarily, not that they're not of God, but they're perhaps things that aren't putting God first in every single situation. And I guess if we are loving God, then it has to have an impact on the way we live. This is another little quote that I found. Saint Augustine said, love God and do as you please. And when I first read that, I thought, hang on a minute, we've got a problem here. I must have misread, because it doesn't sound quite right, does it? Loving God and doing as you please. This sounds a bit like a message that's prevalent in our society today, where it's do whatever you want, do whatever makes you feel good. And that is clearly not what God is saying, not the way that we would want to live. But actually, what St. Augustine was saying was that if we love God completely, then we inevitably find out what pleases God. And if we're continuing to love God wholeheartedly, then actually we find the things that please him become the things that please us. And so actually, it's true that we can do as we please because we're doing what God pleases, because we're doing what pleases God, because we're wanting to love him. And that whole thing about the quantum world, which I think we understand clearly now, where things only make sense, there's only a sense of harmony and togetherness, I think this is part of it as well. There's actually something within us that actually only makes sense, that only clicks once we've got things in the right place. And otherwise, there's an internal tension, there's an internal conflict within us that isn't resolved, that isn't sorted out until we put these things in place properly. Am I making sense? Good. And that's why I guess you'd expect me to say this if you're part of Ashwood, but that's why worship is so important to everything that we do. And I love to worship, and you know, it's great. I don't know about you this morning, but just a real sense that as we join together, I love worshiping God on my own, but there's something really special and significant as we join together as God's people, singing the praises of God, worshiping him. And there's something that's, again, it's very similar, that actually makes sense when we're together and when we're worshiping God. There's something that connects, there's something that seems right, and it's not just an emotional happy clappy thing, it's not just something that is superficial, but it's something that involves all of us. And so you've heard some people say about when you become a Christian you kiss your brains goodbye. I don't think that's true, and I think the more we go on, actually the more sense things seem to make. You know, I can't imagine a world without God. That just, you know, for me, that's you have to kiss your brains goodbye for that to make sense. But I know I am slightly biased. And one of the songs that we sang at Grapevine, the song that's we haven't sung here on a Sunday morning, but I really like it, is a Matt Redman song that says, "We are here for you." And the reason I love it, I think have we got the words out? Yeah, this is just a snippet from it. But I really like the fact that we remind ourselves that we're here for God. And that part of our worship is us saying to God, "God, we are here for you." And it makes a difference. And it's not just for us, it's for God as well. The truth is that when we're loving God, when we're giving him our attention, and that's why worship is so good, it's much more difficult to feel sorry for yourself. It's much more difficult to get tangled up in the things which otherwise causes difficulties and problems. Yes, of course, it's not going to be straightforward. It's not life. Jesus never said, "Follow me and all your problems will be sorted out," did he? He said that he will be with us. But things just make a lot more sense when God has got our attention. And so this morning, as we sing our songs, as we ask the puppets to help us, and we do a few actions and things, our proposal is that we consider together how we love God. And to do that at the start of the year seemed like a sensible and useful and helpful thing for us to do.